This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In 1972, the well-known writer and feminist Robin Morgan addressed the Home Economics Association and accused it of producing a limp, gibbering mass of jelly waiting for marriage. Back then, home ec classes, which taught girls and young women to cook, sew, and run a household while their husbands were busy in the office, were seen as wildly out of step with the principles of gender equality.
Fast forward to 2013. Home ec classes are gone. But almost a third of Americans under 19 are overweight or obese. Many don't know the basics of nutrition or how to shop for and cook a healthy meal. They are in debt, unable to balance a checkbook, let alone negotiate the complexities of credit cards and student loans. So some say it's time to bring back home ec, not just to help young women, but to benefit boys and girls, men and women.
Ruth Graham wrote about this recently in the Boston Globe in her piece, Bring Back Home Ec, the case for a revival of the most retro class in school, and she joins us now. And Ruth, great to have you. Thanks for coming in, and great piece.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And by the way, listeners, you can find a link to Ruth's piece at radioboston.org. Also with us is Alice Lichtenstein. She's a professor of nutrition, science, and policy at Tufts University. She was the lead author of a commentary back in 2010 in the Journal of the American Medical Association titled Bring Back Home Economics. And Dr. Lichtenstein, great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
I appreciate the invitation.
And listeners, we want you involved in this conversation. Is it time to bring back home ec? Do you see evidence of nutritional ignorance, of financial illiteracy? What's the cause? What's the solution? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Ruth, let me just start with a couple of questions with you, because your piece sort of provoked this conversation. And then, Dr. Lichtenstein, I'll come over to you. But what prompted you to write this piece? What are you seeing out there across society that suggests we need to bring home ec back?
Well, I guess I would say that there is this sort of broad constellation of social ills that we read about with young people. One of them is the obesity epidemic, which we read about everywhere. One of them is financial illiteracy. There's a sort of general helplessness might be too strong, but there's record numbers of young 20-somethings living at home with their parents and sort of unable in some way to set up house for themselves. Obviously, you know, that's tied into the economy in really complicated ways that we probably can't sort through here.
Sure.
But a lot of these fall under this broad umbrella of just not having the domestic skills to thrive. So, and all those sort of trace back to home economics.
And what did you find out there in terms of whether or not there's a real movement to revive home ec? In a moment, we're going to hear Dr. Lichtenstein tell you why she thinks a version of it should be revived. But tell me what you find. Is there sort of a kind of critical mass out there of folks, of professors, of academics who say we should bring this back?
Yeah, I think it's getting there. Dr. Lichtenstein is one of those voices. There are historians, there are, you know, other journalists. So there certainly are people speaking up in favor of a revived home ec. And I would also point out, I'm sure there are people maybe already calling in, you know, home ec hasn't technically 100% disappeared. It lives on in this different form called family and consumer sciences. But it's less prominent, it's less prevalent, it's less straightforwardly tailored toward basic life skills, and especially at the high school level is much more about vocational skills. And the numbers of kids who are enrolled in that kind of class have really diminished, even over the last 10 years, have dropped by about 45%. Mm. So, but just to be clear, you know, it hasn't gone away, but it's still in need of a revival. So
let me ask you one question before I come over to Dr. Lichtenstein. Tell us a little bit about the history of home ec, because you wrote about, I found this really one of the most interesting parts of your piece, because we think of it as a quaint idea from another time when women were expected to become proficient in the domestic arts, right, while their men were out working real jobs. But in your piece, you point out that the original idea was rooted in a sort of progressive, even sort of feminist tradition.
Exactly, which really surprised me too. So, I mean, the origins of home ec go all the way back to the end of the 19th century. The term is coined in 1899, and its earliest proponents were these women, you know, very progressive, yes, even feminist, academically minded women. The idea behind home ec is to sort of bring this scientific rigor into domestic tasks. So to bring science into cooking for your family, into cleaning. you know, into sewing and the sort of best practices to sort of formalize these best practices and also to create career opportunities for women who are interested in those things at a time when obviously there are very few opportunities for women to work outside the home. But if we can sort of professionalize ideas about childcare and nutrition, that will create some sort of space for women to be public authorities.
Mm. So Dr. Alice Lichtenstein, let me come to you. As we mentioned, you were the lead author of this commentary for the Journal of the American Medical Association, Bring Back Home Economics. What was your focus? What was your why were you inspired to write that?
Well, as a nutrition community, we've been concerned that people are not developing healthy eating patterns, and one of the ramifications is 2/3 of Americans are either overweight or obese. And I think we really needed to think about, well, how can we actually change the course? And one way to do it is give people the skills to make the decision as to what's good, what's bad. We know it's very difficult to change eating behaviors later in life, so why not start with children and start in a very positive, fun way?
And so how would that work? So it would really be an effort that would begin in kindergarten and go right through the 12th grade experience?
Absolutely. I think there are different stages of development, and I think initially it's just exposing children to different kinds of foods, the kinds of foods that we hope that they learn to enjoy throughout the life cycle. And then as they develop and as their interest peaks, we can add a little bit of complexity and tie it into other subjects, so that if it's something like how many calories do I need to burn off a candy bar, well, that's physical education.
Mm. Now, I have to imagine that there might be, if not resistance, just a sort of response from schools that are very focused on the test these days, and they would just say, we just don't have time to do this, right?
Well, I think that probably is the knee-jerk reaction. However, using a little bit of creativity, I think it can be incorporated into a lot of the activities that are currently going on. So in math class, certainly, as far as how many calories I need per day, and what does that mean if I eat a donut in the morning, to should I buy this big box of cereal or should I buy a small box of cereal, which is the most cost effective?
Mm. And Ruth, in listening to Dr. Lichtenstein, is that happening out there? Are there school systems that are embracing this idea?
There are some really innovative classrooms, innovative school districts that are, you know, I don't want to say that they're happening literally exactly that way, but definitely some really innovative curriculum. Mm. It's not required. I think as of 2006, statewide, there were just 3 states where it's required with either junior high or high school students. So it's going on, but it's a real patchwork. And as I said, the number of kids who are enrolled in this kind of class, you know, have really been declining in recent years. So,
in your piece, I think you came up with the date 1959, where you make the point that it was embraced really widely across the country. What happened? Where did it go? I mean, why did it diminish? Why did the embrace of home ec diminish?
Well, a couple of things. So one is, in the 1950s particularly, processed food companies really see home economics classrooms as an opportunity to sort of promote their wares. So you see processed food companies investing a lot of money and a lot of time in teacher training, and that's where you kind of see home ec turn from a space where children are learning how to cook with real foods, how to budget in practical ways, and you see them over the course of the 1950s maybe learning how to, you know, make a Betty Crocker sheet cake or something. Actually, Betty Crocker specific, I mean, she's a fake character, but was, mm-hmm. you know, she was a quote-unquote home economist. So that's one thing that's happening, is that I would say that that's sort of weakening the power of home ec and weakening its relevance. And then, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, in the 60s and 70s, feminists are starting to say, wait a minute, why are girls spending this precious classroom time learning how to be housewives? And that was a completely legitimate critique, and that was a break that had to happen. So, you know, it's not disappearing necessarily, you know, from the 70s on, but it's certainly, it's diminished at that point. And, you know, in some ways, fair enough.
Mm. And Dr. Lichtenstein, you know, I'd be really curious to hear from you on this. You're an educator. You see a new generation of young people each year. What do you see, I mean, in terms of the evidence, either empirical or anecdotal, that this is a good idea, that we need home ec?
Well, first of all, I think we have to make it real clear that we're not talking about our grandma's home ec, that we're really talking about home ec for both girls and boys. Everybody needs the skills. And I think what the general observations are is that children are not picking up these basic cooking skills and shopping skills and planning skills that they used to from their parents. And whether it be that schedules are so different because work schedules are different and organized activities are encroaching on the dinner time, but for whatever reason, they're not picking up these skills automatically. So therefore, we need to be a little more proactive in providing them to the students.
You know, when I hear the arguments in favor of bringing home ec back, it makes all the sense in the world to me. And yet there's a part of me that can't help being a little sad about it. I mean, the idea that families are no longer capable of providing this basic information and knowledge and teaching to their kids just seems sort of a sad commentary about the way we live.
Well, we don't know if they're not capable or whether they're just not taking the time to do it.
Or they don't have the time. Right.
Right. Yeah. And I think that there's a tremendous amount of variability among families. Certainly my kids got that information. But I think what we need to do is ensure that all children have it, because as they're developing their eating patterns and their preferences, this is what they're probably going to take through lifelong. And we want to set up some kind of a structure so that automatically they sort of make the right choices. It's the choices they enjoy. It doesn't necessarily, we have to say it's because it's good for you or it's healthy, but there are ways of sort of structuring things.
Listeners, let's take some calls. We're talking about whether it's time to bring back home ec. Do you see evidence of sort of nutritional ignorance, financial illiteracy out there? What's the cause? What's the solution? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Kate, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Kate, you're on the air.
Hi. At the risk of sounding slightly defensive, we don't have time in my family for me to do an introduction of a lot of, shall we say, home economic stuff to my children, who are my older two are in sixth grade in Arlington. There is that family and consumer sciences facts class required in Arlington Middle School. And to be honest with you, I'm glad it's there, and I would offer more to my kids, but in a way, they're already hitting a stage where they'd rather hear it from someone besides me.
Interesting.
So that's helpful as well.
So, Kate, I'd be really curious to hear, what are your kids, what are your sixth graders learning that you're most happy with?
Well, only one of the two has them right now. They sort of alternated in as along with art and other sort of specials, if you will. But he's definitely kind of getting, he's forced to be in a kitchen, which isn't a terrible thing. And there's been some discussion of nutrition, and, you know, it's, in a way, it's sort of a soft class. There's not an awful lot of brain work going on, but again, it's another voice reinforcing messages that they would probably not hear from me at this point in our parenting, child rearing.
Well, Kate, thanks so much for that call. And Dr. Lichtenstein, you're nodding your head. That's the kind of thing you're talking about that could begin in schools and go right through, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think we really want to see something that's age appropriate. And ultimately, as the students get older, things would get more complex, and hopefully we'd keep them engaged.
Let's go to Megan, who's calling from Weymouth. Megan, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually a special needs teacher, and I run a class similar to this for students who are in 12th grade and are, I sort of call the class Life After High School, and we bring up a lot of these topics that the students, we feel like, really need to learn before they leave high school. But I work within a public high school, and I talk to other students who aren't in the class, and they say, I need to learn these things. I don't really understand, you know, all about credit cards, or I've never made a budget for going out grocery shopping, and they've come to me with real concern, saying, you know, I wish this class was for a lot of the students in the school. And it made me realize, you know, what we were doing for our students is so valuable, and they've come back and said, you know, I've learned so much in that class, I feel like it was so practical, I could really apply it to my, you know, to real life.
Megan, really grateful for your call, and I want to come back to a point or two that you raised there, but let me go to Bill from Newton and listen to what he has to say. Bill, you're on the air.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I think this is great. I've been talking to people for so many years. My mom was a teacher for 40 years in middle school, and the frustration level got to the point where she had to gracefully retire. But I think beyond, and this is a great program, beyond this, I think there are things that we need to incorporate in this program, such as how do families develop relationships, how to sustain, whether it's a husband-husband, male-male, male-male, female-female, male-female relationship with children, how to keep this bond and this family unit functioning at home so it gives the assurance of security to the children. And it was reinforced at school, that which is taught at home or not taught at home, if they're single-parent homes. I think this needs to be incorporated as well.
Bill, it's a great thought, and I appreciate Megan's call before where she talked about basic instruction and sort of basic financial understanding. But listening to Bill's call, and Dr. Lichtenstein, let me come to you first with this. Is there a basic agreement about what constitutes home ec, you know, what the syllabus should incorporate?
Well, actually, there is. It's now called Family and Consumer Science, and I think that that's an appropriate shift, and that's because the scope of what's being taught has expanded. So at one point, we were really just focusing on food preparation and how to sew on buttons and do hems because it was directed at women that when it was assumed they would get married and that's what their responsibility would lie. But now it's far more expansive in terms of budgeting, in terms of shopping. I sort of think of it sometimes as hunting and gathering in the 21st century because obviously we don't need to know how to bake bread. We don't need to know how to make a white sauce. What we need to do is know how to run through a supermarket and pick up items that are going to ultimately constitute a few good meals.
I'm curious, too, because, we heard Ruth talking about the food industry sort of infiltrating into the sort of home ec world of two or three generations ago. Do you see this sort of education as essentially putting people in a position where they can influence the industries that are stocking the stores full of the food?
Absolutely. We criticize the industry a lot for what they've done to our food supply. But in reality, the industry just wants to make money. And if we create more of a demand for the better choices, they are going to provide more better choices. So if we educate children young and it becomes part of sort of the fabric of how they think about things, even if they go through the rebellious teen years, as they get older, they are going to demand more of those products. And I think it's going to be beneficial for all of us.
Ruth, tell us something more about the American Association of Family and Consumer Sciences. It was the American Home Economics Association,
exactly.
Right? They shifted a name, changed the name in 1993. What are they? Where are they? Who are they? Who do they represent?
Yeah, they represent academics. I mean, there still are. I guess I should back up and say that most college home economics departments have long ago changed their names to things like human sciences, human ecology. They haven't quite agreed on one unified name yet. So they represent academics. They represent, there still are home economists who work for corporations and other entities. And then they also represent teachers. 20 years ago, they changed their name from the American Home Economics Association. They exist to promote, to promote what they now call family and consumer sciences in schools and other spheres.
Let's take one more call from Dennis, who's calling from Foxborough. Dennis, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks very much. I just wanted to address a couple of issues really quickly. One of your guests, I tuned in late, said that a major reason for the demise of home economics or family and consumer sciences was the introduction of processed foods on the one hand and also the women's movement. I think that what you left out was these were budget cut kinds of things, and that's the real reason. Sure. Second part of what I wanted to say is that my wife is a family and consumer sciences teacher who was laid off from her position because of those cuts. And she was in the forefront of the women's movement, working for the ERA, integrating boys into those classes, and making those things meaningful. And I think today we've really lost those skills. We've lost the conveyance of that information. This was an area where people could be integrated regardless of skill level or intelligence, where they could be integrated in terms of the various curricula, from math to writing and so forth. And it's a tragedy that those things are gone. And I say that myself as a retired high school principal.
Dennis, great. Thank you so much for that call and for that perspective. We're really grateful. We have about a minute left or so, and let me ask you both this question because it seems like a good place to stop. And I think Dennis sort of sets it up nicely. And I'll start with you, Dr. Lichtenstein. You know, you wrote that piece back in 2010 calling for the revival of home ec. I mean, do you feel like there is a sort of center of gravity now of and that we're moving forward and that progress is being made on this front?
I have not seen any evidence of it. However, it's not clear that I would be in a position to do that. What I'm really hoping, though, is with articles like Ruth's, that their awareness will be increased once again, and there'll be a grassroots effort from, and it may take the parents, but that we will actually see some curricular changes.
And what do you think, Ruth, as you look forward? Real possibility of change?
I hope so. I do think these conversations are important, but I think that Bill, you know, is hitting an important point, which is that we're in a, you know, a test-driven, sort of budget-strapped educational economy. And so, you know, something's going to have to give. But I'm hopeful.
Well, that's Ruth Graham. She's a contributor to the Boston Globe's Ideas section. She's author of a piece called Bring Back Home Ec, The Case for a Revival of the Most Retro Class in School. You can find a link to that at radioboston.org. And Alice Lichtenstein, professor of nutrition, science, and policy at Tufts University. She was the lead author of a 2010 article in the Journal of the American Medical Association entitled Bring Back Home Economics. And Dr. Lichtenstein, Ruth Graham, thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.
And listeners, you can keep the conversation going at radioboston.org. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you, but many thanks for your calls. There's a lot more still ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. Stay with us.